This special broadcast of Governor Bill Walker's second State of the State address is produced by 360 North and KTOO in Juneau. I'm Jeremy Shea. Governor Bill Walker will be headed into the chambers of the Alaska House of Representatives shortly to deliver his speech. The governor is required by the state constitution to deliver the State of the State address every year. It's a platform for the governor to tell Alaska where the state's headed and what his policy goals are. Right now, the representatives and senators have gathered in the House chambers on the Hill, just waiting for the governor to head in. Walker's political roots are with the Republican Party, although he became an independent during his 2014 campaign for governor. In the year or so since he took office, he's had some clashes with the legislature's Republican-led majorities, perhaps most notably over the state's relationship with the oil and gas industries. Those relationships are closely watched for a number of reasons. The state budget and economy are almost completely dependent on oil and gas, and the governor is making his way into chambers right now. Governor Walker is making his way to the podium, shaking hands with House Minority Leader Chris Tuck, some of the other representatives. There's a smattering of applause as he makes his way up, and he'll probably begin in just a moment.
President Meyer, Speaker Chenault, Lieutenant Governor Mallott, members of the legislature, members of the cabinet, fellow Alaskans, good evening, and thank you for this opportunity to address the second session of the 29th legislature and the people of Alaska. First, let me introduce my First Lady of 38 years, Donna Walker, and our daughter, Lindsay Walker, Lindsay Hobson. And I also want to introduce Lieutenant Governor Mallott's First Lady of 43 years, Toni Mallott. It has been 1 year since I stood before this body and gave my first State of the State speech. Much has happened since then, and tonight I will recap the past 12 months and then address not just this coming year, but also the future of Alaska. Many have asked me how my first year as governor has gone. I think out of the mouths of small children, we get the unedited truth. First Lady Donna Walker enjoys visiting Alaska's classrooms to read to and talk with the children. Recently, a dad told Donna that after her visit to his daughter's classroom, the six-year-old could not stop talking about the governor's wife. In fact, he overheard her while she played a game with her younger sister when she announced, "Now, if you win, you get to be the governor's wife." "Well, what happens if I lose?" came the response. Big sister replied, "Well, I guess you'll just have to be the governor." You know, some people have offered me their condolences on being governor during this challenging time. The truth is, I am so proud to be the governor of this great state. It's a tremendous honor and a tremendous responsibility to lead at this particular moment in our history. I know what we can do for our children and our grandchildren when we make smart decisions. We will not be able to accomplish that, what we need to do, without working together. Several months ago, the Lieutenant Governor bought me a gift. It was a picture taken in the village of Metlakatla in the early 1900s. In the picture, There were folks in rain gear standing in a stream bed with a rope. Back then, when Metlakatla residents needed to remove tree stumps, the entire community gathered with a single rope and pulled. The picture is titled Pulling Together. Lieutenant Governor Malott wrote at the bottom of the picture, "Governor, pulling together, it's what we do." He's right. We have been pulling together. And I know we can get through anything if we all pull together as Alaskans. And I have an extraordinary team of Alaskans pulling together in my cabinet. Each commissioner was selected based on their talent, expertise, and proven leadership. I also chose them based upon their willingness to make bold decisions during this time of transition. I also want to thank every state employee. In lean budget times, there was always a lot of discussion about reduction in the number of state employees. And there have been significant reductions since I took office. This does not diminish, but rather increases my appreciation for the hard work each of you is doing, often with less manpower and fewer resources. I also want to express my gratitude to all Alaskans who wear a uniform, whether it's a municipal, state, or federal uniform. Thank you for protecting the cities, our state, and our nation. And finally, members of the legislature, I offer my thanks to each of you for your dedication to the people of Alaska. Thank you for engaging with me. At times in vigorous debate about the best course for our state, when we work together with open minds and open doors, I know we can solve the challenges we face. Now let's take a look at the year in review. I stood before this body last year and said, if you pass the Alaska Safe Children's Act, sometimes referred to as Aaron's Law and Breeze Law, I would sign it. You did just that with near unanimous support in a special session. Together, we took steps to protect our most vulnerable. We recently created a special unit in Bethel focused specifically on investigating violent crimes. In the past year, thousands of Alaskans have joined a nationwide movement to speak up to stop domestic violence and sexual assault. Even one voice can make a big difference. I pledge to honor those courageous voices. I will do everything in my power to prevent violence, support victims, and bring perpetrators to justice. Suicide. It's tearing the heart out of too many of our families and communities. Lieutenant Governor Malott and Commissioner Val Davidson have started a cabinet-level team to better coordinate state efforts in suicide prevention. I also applaud efforts of the Statewide Suicide Prevention Council, led by Bill Martin. But you don't have to be a cabinet or council member to make a difference. Each of us can help someone who's in a crisis. It can be as simple as sharing a phone number. The number for a statewide suicide hotline is on my website. Through Medicaid expansion, we were able to provide federally funded health care to thousands of Alaskans. In the first 4 months, nearly 8,000 Alaskans gained access to health care coverage. That also brought in $22 million in new federal revenue to Alaska. That means savings to the State General Fund and a healthier Alaska. We are committed to improving the state's Medicaid program through ongoing reform. We are also turning our focus on the rising cost of health care, which affect nearly every Alaskan and the state treasury. You will hear more of our efforts on that front in the coming months. When I took office, a recent Supreme Court decision shed light on weaknesses in our adoption process under the Indian Child Welfare Act. We improved the adoption process to make it easier for Alaska Native children to stay with relatives or tribal members, thanks to the collaborative input from the Alaska Federation of Natives and tribal leadership. By embracing the spirit and values of the Indian Child Welfare Act, we are working together to keep more Alaska Native children in their home communities. My administration also inherited a contentious voting rights case. Thanks to the hard work of Lieutenant Governor Malott, working together with all parties, that case was settled, and we increased access to the polls for Alaskans with limited English proficiency. Also, we now have a language assistant coordinator to ensure all Alaskans can exercise the right to vote. In addition, we are modernizing our voter registration system. As of November 24th, Alaskans can register to vote online. Nearly 1,000 Alaskans have already done so. My administration has taken steps to address concerns about the potential for Canadian mines to pollute Alaskans' downstream waters. British Columbia Premier Christy Clark and I agreed to establish a bilateral working group focused on protecting transboundary waters. Lieutenant Governor Malott will continue working with Alaska tribes and stakeholders, as well as leaders in British Columbia, to ensure that activities in Canada do not harm Alaska waters. The Alaska National Guard issues demanded immediate, probative, corrective action when I took office. I'm so grateful to Adjutant General Lori Hummel for her leadership in ushering in cultural changes needed at the Guard. Many steps have been taken to restore public trust by investigating, making public, and addressing systemic problems in the Guard. While there are many tools we need to get us through this period of transformation, there is no tool more important than public trust. Government cannot buy or rent public trust. It must be earned. That begins with listening to the public, then acting based on what we heard. A year ago, I asked Attorney General Richards to retain an investigator to look into all of the allegations of misconduct from within the Guard. He selected retired Superior Court Judge Patricia Collins. Her report was made public and prompted ongoing investigations. I am now hearing from the rank and file that the improvements under the new leadership are vast and appreciated. Now, there's a distance to go, but the wheels of change are moving in the right direction. General Hummel and her team have also begun an initiative to reestablish a stronger Alaska State Defense Force presence in rural Alaska. The goal is to get more rural Alaskans engaged in the National Guard and the military. Addressing the high frequency of inmate deaths in Alaska correctional system was among the challenges I faced when I took office. This was and is a major concern, as it should be to all Alaskans. We had to take a closer look, so I ordered an administrative review of the department. The results of that review, including much of the video footage, have been made public. Some of the disturbing aspects of that report, despite that, there are some positives. We recognize we had a problem, and we took an honest look at it. We have made changes in the department to focus efforts on system-wide cultural changes. Other states, some of our federal partners, and many Alaskans who contacted us during the review want to help us change. And many of you in the legislature have been raising concerns about our correction system for some time and want it fixed as much as I do. Let's continue to work together on long overdue reform. Let me be clear. We have many wonderful employees in the Department of Corrections who want to help improve the system. They care about each other and fellow Alaskans. We are looking into bringing back what used to be called prison industries. With more than 4,700 Alaskans are incarcerated, I am a firm believer that the best cure for many social ills is a job. We are exploring opportunities to better prepare prisoners for reentry into society. During this legislative session, you have before you a criminal justice reform initiative that is the result of collaboration between all three branches of government, legislative, executive, and judicial. It proposes practical reforms to reduce the crime and recidivism rate, relieve overcrowding, and improve conditions in our prisons. These reforms could save Alaskans up to $500 million over the next decade. The Pew Foundation has committed resources and expertise to help. Senator John Coghill will carry the bill and recommendations, Senate Bill 91, and my administration will offer our full support. This initiative is another great example of what we can accomplish when we work together. To continue building and maintaining public trust in state government, the Department of Law is establishing a public integrity unit. This unit will investigate officer-involved shootings, deaths in state custody, and allegation of government corruption. Changing gears, I'd like to highlight some of our efforts on resource development. We met numerous times with North Slope producers, independent producers, and companies doing work in Cook Inlet. As it became clear, the existing generous oil tax credit programs could not be sustained in our current budget environment, we continued to meet with independent companies. They showed their willingness to explore other options that may be acceptable to their companies and within the financial reach of Alaska. Early into the year, we received a request from ConocoPhillips for assistance with their federal permitting on their Greater Moose's Tooth 1 project. We were happy to help. It kicked off the first of many face-to-face meetings I had with the Secretary of Interior on this project and others. We all celebrated the announcement that the Greater Moose's Tooth project received not only the required federal permits, but the internal corporate approval to move forward. We are pleased with the progress being made by ExxonMobil at Point Thompson and look forward to that project going into production sometime in the next several months. Let's turn now to the AKLNG project. Alaska finally has a seat at the decision-making table, and I thank each of you here tonight for your help in making that opportunity possible with your strong support of the TransCanada buyout. We now have commitments from all three major companies at the North Slope to make sure gas is available for a gas line project, whether they remain in Alaska's gas line project or not. This is a significant step forward for the Gasline LNG project. The reception we received in Japan last September from the Asian market following my presentation to the LNG Producer Consumer Conference was extremely encouraging. You know, Alaska first forged a relationship with the Asian market nearly 50 years ago. The very first shipment of LNG into Japan came from Nikiski in October of 1969. That is the longest honored contract in the history of LNG. And the market has not forgotten that and stands ready to work with Alaska to ensure the pipeline is built and the LNG project at Nikiski is successful. Tonight, I'm wearing a pin that, for the first time, and I typically wear a pin of Alaska, and it typically has one pipeline on. I took it off of Tom Barrett's lapel and put it on my lapel because it has a map of Alaska and it has a pipeline in it. Tonight I'm wearing a different pin. It's a map of Alaska. It has two pipelines on it. It has one, the oil pipeline, and has the gas pipeline. It was given to me by one of our partners in AKLNG, and it's my goal to give each one of you this very same pin. This really represents the future of this state in many, many ways. And so I brought one for Mr. Speaker's side as well. So it's a I may have to look into the APOC rules to see if I can give you a gift. If there's any sort of problem with that, but I'm honored to wear it, and I'm honored that it was one of our partners. I can't say the name. I don't have her permission, but you can figure it out from there. Our goal is to have to this session the commercial contract necessary to advance this project. The fiscal certainty our partners need before they make their final investment decision will require Alaskans to vote on a constitutional amendment. We believe it is necessary for legislators and the public to see the terms of those concessions well before being asked to vote on them. Turning to the challenges and opportunities ahead, I think Senator Click Bishop said it best. When a reporter asked him the top three issues this session, Senator Bishop said, where are you, Senator Bishop? Okay, all right, okay, there you are. His reply said, they are this, his top three priorities. They're in this order, the budget, and the budget. As I have said frequently over this past year, Alaska does not have a wealth problem, but we do have a cash flow problem. When I filed to run for governor, oil was over $100 per barrel. When I stood before you at this time last year, the price of oil had dropped 51% in 83 days. It was dropping to below $50 per barrel. Today it's $26 per barrel. Some experts project there will be no rebound for many years. That means we cannot continue with business as usual. That means we will have to change our course. Alaskans are no strangers to adversity, and we have weathered many major storms together. One that I remember the most was on a Friday 52 years ago. Most of those here have heard my family's earthquake story. What I want to reflect on tonight is not the disaster itself, but my family's response to the news, the new reality that followed. In 1964, my family's construction business was doing reasonably well. We were building several houses a year. Then the earthquake and tsunami struck, killing more than 130 people. More than 30 were personal friends and neighbors who were on the dock that day in Valdez. The earthquake destroyed whatever financial stability my family had managed to build. All of the material we had purchased for two construction projects were on the dock that day, all uninsured. The tsunami had swallowed it all. Post-quake, we worked on a few repair projects around Valdez. There was no more work. We couldn't build houses in a town that had to be moved, and the new town of Valdez had not yet been developed. We went from making a decent living to barely scraping by. It all changed in 5.5 minutes. I remember well my father calling the six of us to the dining room table for a family talk. I was 12. My dad said, well, the federal agencies say we should file for bankruptcy. I asked, what does that mean? He explained, well, we will be able to keep our tools and our vehicle, but we don't have to pay for everything we lost on the dock in the quake. Oh, I knew we owed the First Bank of Valdez money. My best friend's dad owned the bank, so I asked, so if we don't pay Tom Gilson's dad, what does he do? Bankruptcy was designed precisely for our situation, but our family chose not to go that route. Instead, we set about getting every possible job to replace our lost income in order to pay our debts. My brother, sisters, and I did what we could to pitch in. I started a dog sitting business for tourists while they went by boat to see Columbia Glacier. My brother got a job in the crab processing plant. We pooled our earnings. On Fridays, when we would pile into the car to go pick up my older sister from her babysitting job, Friday was her payday. We drove straight from there to the Gilson's Mercantile to buy groceries with her babysitting wages. It was that dire. My family became the school janitors. Every day after school, my buddies would take off to go shoot hoops and hunt ptarmigan. I went to the janitorial closet, picked up the mops and brooms, and spent the next 4 hours cleaning the junior high and high school with my brother and sister. Our dad cleaned the grade school. We were fortunate to have the work. We struggled right up until the construction of the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline System. But we survived our financial crisis by cutting our expenses and developing new sources of revenue. We survived through hard work and pulling together as a family. Today, Alaska has been struck by an earthquake of a different kind. Oil prices are plummeting and oil production is declining. That means the revenue that has funded up to 90% of our state since the mid-1970s is rapidly declining. The money we have relied on to pave our streets, educate our children, build our hospitals, has also rapidly declined. For the past 3 years, our growing deficits have been covered from our savings. If we continue down that path, those savings will be depleted in less than 4 years. My fellow Alaskans, it's time for a family talk. We didn't get here overnight, and it isn't as though we weren't warned of this day. In 1976, Governor Jay Hammond told the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, and I quote, "While the time to pay the piper may well be some 20 or 30 years away, if we continue to build a government funded primarily on one resource alone, what a terrible legacy we would leave to our children." Alaska did not heed Governor Hammond's sage advice, and that day is now upon us. Given my 30 years in Valdez, I tend to use boat analogies. There's been a hole in our fiscal boat for a long time. Oil throughput in the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline began to decline in 1988. Starting in fiscal year 2013, we developed a budget hole. But rather than fix the hole, we've been pumping the boat to stay afloat. As the hole grows, we've been throwing more and more pumps at it, drawing down on our savings to pump out a larger and larger deficit. In 2014, it was a $1.6 billion deficit. It's now a $3.5 billion deficit. That means we're drawing down from our savings at a rate of $400,000 an hour. During the time here tonight, we will have drawn down another $400,000. Throwing more pumps in to keep our fiscal boat afloat is just not the answer. It is time to put the boat up on the grid and fix the hole. We have three tools with which to fix the hole. We can reduce spending, we can use permanent fund earnings, and we can find additional sources of revenue. Most Alaskans who have taken a thorough look at the problem have concluded we will need to use all three. After months of roundtable consultation with Alaskans from all corners of this great state, we introduced the new Sustainable Alaska Plan. The first part of the plan calls for spending cuts. We've already begun. Working with you, we cut close to $1 billion from the State General Fund spending this fiscal year. $385 million from the operating budget and $493 million from the capital budget. As of October 1st, 2015, the state has 587 fewer permanent employees than the year before. If we include the University of Alaska, the Alaska Railroad, and temporary employees, that number more than doubles to about 1,400 fewer state employees. If my budget is approved, we will have the lowest number of state employees since 2007. We are working hard to manage these reductions with the least impact possible to public services. Early in my administration, I placed restrictions on hiring and travel and formalized them about a month ago. Four departments are using mandatory or voluntary furloughs. All departments have reduced and continue to reduce staffing levels. We have combined divisions. For example, within the Department of Commerce, Community Economic Development, the Division of Community and Regional Affairs is in the process of streamlining its 10 divisions down to 4. We are implementing a shared service concept the state of Ohio used to reduce the number of employees who do similar tasks in different departments. We have consolidated our lease space. Private, local, and federal partners are helping to provide some services the state can no longer afford. And these are just a few of the cost-saving measures we are pursuing. But the reality is this: if we laid off every state employee, it still would not make much of a dent in the deficit. Cuts alone cannot solve our budget challenge, and time is of the essence. That is why I introduced the Alaska Permanent Fund Protection Act. If we don't make significant changes in how we fund government, we will drain the constitutional budget reserve within 2 years, and the permanent fund earnings reserve in another 2 years. The permanent fund dividend will go to $0 in just 4 years. The Permanent Fund Protection Act makes the permanent fund stronger by directing additional revenue to it. It puts government on an allowance, and it makes the permanent fund permanent. Under my plan, half of the state's share of our natural resource royalties will go toward dividends. The first year dividend checks will be funded at a flat $1,000 for each qualified Alaskan resident. Since the permanent fund program began, the average dividend check has been about $1,150. Going forward, dividends would be tied to resource royalties. There will be no cap on the dividend. I repeat, there will be no cap on the dividend. When new oil flows through taps, or oil prices rise, or when the gas line project is built, dividends will go up. We must put government on an allowance, not one that rises and falls with the price of oil, but one that is stable and sustainable. We must get off the boom and bust budgeting roller coaster that we've been on for far too long. It's time we focus on the next 50 years and not just the next budget cycle or the next election cycle. I look forward to working with all of you this year to pass the Permanent Fund Protection Act. If we do not take this critical step this year, our ability to close our budget gap becomes much more challenging. The Permanent Fund Protection Act and spending cuts gets us most of the way to a balanced budget, but we need that third tool. We must generate new revenue. If we adopt the entire plan, Alaskans will still be the only state to pay a dividend check every year to residents. We will have the nation's second lowest individual tax rate. We will have money to provide essential services as well as invest in major projects such as the gas line. And we will have set the state on a sustainable course for our children and our grandchildren. The last part of my plan closes the fiscal gap by generating revenues through modest tax increases. I'm proposing multiple measures to ensure that no segment of Alaska is overly burdened. Here are the key proposals. I'm proposing a modest income tax linked to the federal income tax. It amounts to less than 1% of the gross income for the average Alaskan. We selected an income tax over a sales tax for a couple of reasons. First, we wanted out-of-state workers who commute back and forth to Alaska to contribute to the solution. We also were sensitive to local governments that already have a sales tax. We didn't want to stack a state sales tax on top of a local sales tax. State income taxes are deductible from your federal taxes, and an income tax is less costly and burdensome to collect than a sales tax. We're also proposing an increase to the alcohol and tobacco tax. I think of those as users' fees. Alaskans are free to make their own choice, but there are significant public health and safety costs related to alcohol and tobacco use. These hit our general funds hard, and these taxes help offset those costs. Alaska currently has the lowest motor fuel tax in the nation. Even after the proposed increase, we will still be well below the national average tax rate. Fisheries, mining licenses, and cruise ship head tax. These measures ensure that all sectors of our economy contribute to the solution. The fishery bill proposes an increase of 1% to various fishery levies. The mining licensing tax proposes an increase of 2%. The first 100,000 of a company's income is exempt from the increase. The cruise ship head tax legislation eliminates an existing port fees credit deduction. After careful study and consultation with the industry, my team recommended that we make reasonable changes to our oil and gas tax credit and tighten some of the provisions that were enacted in very different fiscal times. My bill will reduce the state spending by about $400 million. The bill also provides a limited waiver of confidentiality so Alaskans know where our money is going. None of these pieces of the plan are politically popular. I realize that. What my team and I strive to do was ensure that the process was fair, At the end of every discussion, we asked ourselves, is this fair? That has been and continues to be our internal test of the plan. I have said many times, this plan is written in pencil, not pen. There will be much discussion, debate, and criticism over the next few months. I welcome that debate. The only unacceptable option is to do nothing. Delay is the enemy. It is an option Alaska cannot afford. Again, I want to reemphasize that if we implement the new Sustainable Alaska Plan in its entirety, we will still be the only state that pays out an annual dividend to every qualifying resident. Alaska will still have the second lowest individual tax burden in the nation. We will still be able to grow our savings, and we will be able to provide essential state services like education, transportation, and public safety. And we will have the financial means to invest in the economic growth of our state. Earlier this month, the National Bond Rating Agency, Standard & Poor's, downgraded Alaska's bond rating. In its January 5 summary statement that I hope every Alaskan should read, you can find it on my website, Standard & Poor's wrote, "The negative outlook reflects the large structural budget deficit in Alaska's unrestricted general fund. Currently, the state is able to finance its operating deficits by withdrawing funds from its budgetary reserves. But the magnitude of the fiscal deficits makes the arrangement unsustainable and, unless corrected, inconsistent with the current rating. Therefore, we will likely again lower the state's rating, possibly by more than one notch, if state lawmakers do not enact measures to begin correcting the state's fiscal imbalance during the 2016 legislative session," end quote. The message is clear. Standard & Poor's concluded, if lawmakers succeed in putting the state on what we view as a glide path to a sustainable fiscal structure, with a strong reserves balance still intact, we could revise the outlook to stable. As governor, I am flexible on the details of a fiscal plan, as long as the outcome meets the basic tests of fairness and sustainability. I am not flexible on the need to get there this year. It's time to fix the hole in the boat. You know, with all this talk about the budget, I don't want us to lose sight of what really matters. Alaska is much more than a balance sheet. However, it's critical that we balance the budget in order to reach our dreams and goals. I want us to move past the current fiscal uncertainty so that we can maximize our collective potential. We have tremendous opportunities. While we cannot guarantee prosperity to every individual Alaskan, every Alaskan should have the opportunity to prosper. I highlight just a few of the opportunities our state has. Tourism is one of our greatest areas for potential growth. In the past 4 years, winter visitation has grown by 8%, and the number of summer travelers has increased by 12%. Annually, nearly 2 million tourists visit Alaska, and collectively, they spend nearly $2 billion. The visitor industry improves the quality of life for Alaskans in many ways. Most importantly, it provides jobs to 46,000 Alaskans during peak season. Those jobs support the health of our local communities and helps develop Alaskan leaders and entrepreneurs. In fact, several of my commissioners worked in the Binkley family's riverboat discovery business in Fairbanks as teens, and three of our own children worked in the summer in tourism businesses to help with college expenses. Alaska's tourism industry is potentially our largest renewable resource with untapped potential, particularly in adventure tourism, and opportunities to encourage travelers to spend additional time throughout Alaska to share our rich culture and heritage. Alaska has more mineral deposits than any other state. If Alaska were a country, sometimes I wish it was, it would be the eighth most mineral-rich nation in the world. We need to be sure that we are advancing the necessary infrastructure for additional mines to be responsibly developed. Recently, I had the pleasure to tour the Fort Knox mine north of Fairbanks. That mine was chock full of Alaskan workers. It provides substantial revenues to a Fairbanks North Star borough. Last year, I mentioned the incredible carrots grown here in Alaska, and as a result, I took a little friendly jabbing from some of my friends here. But over this past year, I have met with the president of Fred Meyer and spoken with the president of Albertson Safeway. I asked them to buy Alaskan produce instead of hauling produce to Alaska. I also asked them to consider exporting Alaska produce to their stores in Lower 48. I look forward to continuing that discussion as part of a long-term vision with the Agriculture Board. One of the driving justifications for statehood was to have more control over our fish. Our Constitution specifically mandates sustained yield of that resource. Thanks to conservative, science-based management, we have the best managed fisheries in the world. We must also work to ensure that the world understands the difference between our wild and sustainably managed fish and all the rest. The bounty of Alaska's waters creates thousands of jobs and improves our quality of life every year in commercial, subsistence, personal use, and sports fisheries. We acknowledge and are committed to working with all user groups of this valuable resource. New shipping routes along Alaska's Arctic coast can create opportunities for Alaska that can be likened to the impact of the opening of the Panama Canal. We will need new and expanded ports, roads, and rail extensions to meet this great opportunity. Now, we have traditionally been an energy state. As we diversify our economy, we have an opportunity to be a leader in renewable energy, emerging energy technologies, and energy efficiency. With our abundant wind, geothermal, tidal, and yes, even solar resources, we are uniquely suited to test, develop these new technologies. On a practical level, reducing diesel use in our remote communities lowers costs for families, government, and local businesses, and increases energy security. Communities like Kodiak are showing what can be done, with 99.7% of their electricity now coming from renewables. Alaska should have the lowest cost energy in the nation instead of the highest. The gas line will help with that and will create numerous value-added industry opportunities in Alaska. For example, last year I mentioned we should be making cement north of Fairbanks. Limestone is now being processed there, but in order to make cement, it will take lower cost energy. We have all the limestone we need, the rail infrastructure is there, all we need is lower cost energy. Even in these challenging times, Alaska students are a source of optimism and confidence. Their enthusiasm for tomorrow is not diminished by today's oil prices. Today's education leaders are developing a sustainable plan for Alaska's public education system based on input from Alaskans statewide. They are developing a strategic plan to ensure quality instruction and improved academic achievement for all. The plan has three priorities: empower local control of education, modernize the state's educational system, and ensure high-quality educators for Alaska's children. My administration remains committed to maintaining and continuously improving a comprehensive, quality public education system regardless of our economic challenges. To our teachers tonight, I thank each of you for doing what may be the most important job in this state. You equip our students with necessary academic skills. You also carry the responsibility to help our students shape productive lives for themselves and to exemplify the best value of our society. We are fortunate to have a world-class university system in Alaska. Last spring, during my tour of Prudhoe Bay, I met many petroleum engineers working for BP and other companies who are graduates of the excellent program at the University of Alaska. We continue to work on ways to better incorporate the skills found in our university system into our administration and our Alaska's workforce. During this period of uncertainty and change, we need to use our university as our brain bank. Programs like the Cold Climate Housing Research Center in Fairbanks, the Institute of Social and Economic Research, and the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program are helping ensure that Alaskans provide the brain power and innovation for our Alaska's future. And often the most difficult step of a journey is the first step. It will take bold steps, but Alaska's future hangs in the balance. We need bold steps for new beginnings. Alaska cannot afford to wait. Some of you in this legislature have already proposed bold steps. You have offered new solutions to our fiscal challenges. Your willingness to propose ideas gives me hope that together we can make this happen. One of the great privileges of this job is the opportunity to experience the extraordinary caring and courage of everyday Alaskans. Several months ago, I received an email from a Houma resident who explained that he is blind. He wrote, and I quote, "Where there is no vision, the people perish. When I lost my sight in 2008, I did not lose my vision." He offered encouragement and said, I quote, "Today, we the people can create solutions." I was so inspired by his words and have taken them to heart. In October, when Wisconsin Republican Representative Paul Ryan was sworn in as Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, he quoted Democrat President Harry Truman. Speaker Ryan said, "In standing here, I cannot help but think of something Harry Truman once said. The day after Franklin Roosevelt died and Truman became president, he told a group of reporters, 'If you ever pray, pray for me now.' When they told me yesterday what had happened, I felt like the moon, the stars, and all the planets had fallen on me." Speaker Ryan went on to say, "We all should feel that way. A lot is on our shoulders. So if you ever pray, pray for each other. Republicans for Democrats. Democrats for Republicans. And I don't mean pray for a conversion. Pray for a deeper understanding, because when you're up here, you see it so clearly. Wherever you come from, whatever you believe, we are all in the same boat. And tonight, I ask each of you, members of the legislature, to do the same, because we too are all in the same boat. Tonight is not about doom and gloom. Time is about the incredible future that is in store for Alaska, and we have the guts to take hold of the wheel with two strong hands, the hand of the administration and the hand of the legislature, and navigate through rough seas with some serious but necessary course corrections. As we were putting the finishing touches on the new Sustainable Alaska Plan we rolled out last month, many advised me not to recommend changes to the permanent fund dividend, and certainly not to propose any taxes. They warned that should I take such bold steps to fix our fiscal challenge, those actions would hasten the end of my political life. To those who question my political wisdom, I admit I may not be politically savvy, but I am a loyal son of this great land, and as your governor, I will always put Alaska's interest above my own. So here's the deal. I did not run for governor to keep the job. I ran for governor to do the job. Now is the time to put aside politics as usual. Now is the time for bold steps and new beginnings. The state of our state is strongest when we pull together. This is the Alaska that I love. This is the Alaska I have always known. So come on, Alaskans. Grab onto that rope, pull Alaska into the sustainable and prosperous future. Thank you, and God bless Alaska.
That was Alaska Governor Bill Walker's 2016 State of the State Address live from the state capitol in Juneau. Historically, we've offered the governor's opposing political party an opportunity to respond as part of this broadcast. Governor Walker has no party, so we offered a few minutes to one representative of each party to pre-record statements to include after the address. The Republicans opted out. We did record this statement earlier today with Representative Chris Tuck, the leader of the House Democrats.
Hello, I'm Representative Chris Tuck, leader of the Alaska Independent Democratic Coalition, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Coalition and Alaska Senate Democrats. Thank you for spending part of your evening with us. Together, we are standing up for Alaskans. We know how trying times can be, to rush out the door to get the kids to school, to work hard every day, to live within your budget, only to come home, turn on the evening news, and learn that the governor's talk of capping your permanent fund dividend, imposing an income tax or sales tax, and making dangerous cuts to eliminate pre-K and early education. We understand your frustrations and worries. The continued drop in oil prices, broken promises of increased oil production, and a failure to properly prepare for these factors has resulted in what is obviously a fiscal crisis. These are critical times, and now Republican lawmakers are working on their own plan for taxes and cuts. The decisions we make during this session can either grow or hurt the economy. As we consider these proposals, we insist that any solution be fair for working Alaskans, the elderly, and our most vulnerable residents. We also insist that any solutions do not cater to the wishes of special interests and mega corporations. The Alaska Independent Democratic Coalition and the Senate Democrats are committed to finding more efficient ways to deliver state services without harming the overall economy. There are certain aspects of state government that must not be harmed as we seek a solution. That includes our public education system. We can't place the burden of fixing our problems on the backs of schools, teachers, and our children. We are committed to education opportunities from pre-K and early learning all the way up through the University of Alaska. The first 5 years of a child's life is crucial. Investing in parents as teachers, best beginnings, and pre-K provide the best bang for the buck for our education dollars. We need a vibrant and efficient university system, which is our center for research and an incubator for innovation and new industries. And we must expand vocational educational opportunities for Alaskans who wish to be part of these new industries. Studies show that the best way to improve economic standing is through education. Good jobs require a good education. A good education creates good jobs. We believe in Alaska and its great potential. We have an abundance of natural resources and incredible talented people. We want to make Alaska a place where ideas and innovation flourish, education is the highest quality, and our resources are put to good use. As a result, the economy thrives and jobs are rewarding. Governor Walker has courageously put forward a fiscal plan. It's a starting point, but it needs a lot of work because it unfairly burdens some Alaskans while protecting special interests. To fix this, we need to put aside party politics and work together. We need to go back to the days when being a Republican or Democrat didn't matter. We all pulled together and did what's best for Alaska. We can't delay in making these tough decisions. If we are to realize any returns in the future, we must make wise investments today. A politician thinks of the next election, a statesman thinks of the next generation. It is time for every lawmaker to be a statesman. So let's all come together and do what's best for Alaska. I assure you, we are dedicated to solving the fiscal problems of the state, and we are ready to get to work, but we need your help. Wise decision-making demands that we listen to you. Please speak out and participate in the public process. We are listening. And if you speak loud enough and often enough, the Republican majorities will be forced to listen too. As we work through these challenging times, we take comfort in the spirit of Alaska. Hard work, dedication, the will to succeed. And I am reminded of the challenges faced by Alaska's first people and how they continue to overcome by using the spirit of togetherness. It is the same spirit that Alaska Independent Democratic Coalition and Alaska Senate Democrats look forward to working together with Governor Walker, the Republican majorities, with you and for you to build a better and brighter future for Alaska.
That was Representative Chris Tuck, leader of the House Democrats, recorded earlier today. This has been special coverage of Governor Bill Walker's 2016 State of the State Address. From 360 North and KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for joining us tonight.